Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Nick Windman. How are you, Nick?
I'm fine, thank you, Chris. Nice to see you.
Excellent, excellent. We're in Aubrey Organic Vineyard in the we're in Sussex, aren't
we? We're in Surrey here.
Surrey,
yeah. Oh, the Surrey Hills.
Near Guildford, yeah. Yeah. On the North Down.
On the North Downs, yes, yep. On the southern slopes of the North Downs here.
Yep, lovely. And I actually bike around here a lot on my Sunday long rides.
Yeah, we have a lot of bikers here.
I think you do, I think. And fishermen, by the looks of things.
The land here is actually owned by Aubrey Estates, which is the Duke of Northumberland, and we have a long lease here. And Aubrey Estates have a number of other enterprises, including fishing.
Yeah, I was reading on the website. I was actually Googling your vineyard before I came to do some research, and I landed up on the Aubrey fishing site. So I found all about the three lakes here and the one in Zion Park, not far from where I live in Twickenham. So,
yes, that's right. Zion is their London home, and they have a lot of weddings there, and they're very supportive, and we supply a lot of our wine for their weddings.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. So you lease the land. How long have you got a lease for?
We have a 30-year lease on the land.
That's not too long, though, is it?
No, I think, but, you know, unless the sort of Greenbelt policy goes completely berserk and the Duke has the possibility of building houses here, I don't think there'll be any problem extending it.
Yeah, yeah. He's the biggest property owner in UK, isn't it? Or is the Queen?
I don't know about that. It's not the Duke of Westminster, it's the Duke of Northumberland. So their family home is in Alnwick in Northumberland, which is home of Harry Potter.
I notice there's a broomstick on the way in. What's that all about?
Well, that's just part of our sort of biodynamic kit, really.
No, it's not a throwback to Harry Potter.
It's not a throwback to Harry Potter, no. But we do use it.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so what we want to talk about today is just a little bit about the vineyard and a little bit about why you're a biodynamic vineyard, but you don't make a lot of biodynamic wines and things like that, and there's some interesting things going on with yeast that we talked about earlier. So, yeah. But how long has the vineyard been going for, Nick?
Well, we planted the vineyard in May 2009. It seems like only yesterday, but that's now, it's getting on for eight years ago, which is amazing, really.
So 8 years. So you wouldn't have had too many bottles of sparkling wine juice because you've got 2 years of letting the vine grow, 3 years.
Yeah, last year, 2016, was the first year that we had any volume sparkling wine. We had a little bit the year before. But as you know, it takes a long time to get to a position where you've got sparkling wine made in the same way as champagne before it's released. So it's sort of 7-8 years before you've got anything, really, which is quite painful on cash flow.
Yeah, I was going to say, you used to be in IT, though, so I understand you sold your business and made lots of money and spent it all on a vineyard.
That's pretty well true. I don't know about lots of money, made some money. IT was my career from the age of 20, really. And I'd always dreamt of having a vineyard, always thought it would probably have to be in mainland Europe. But then in about 2007, I met a guy called Stephen Skelton, who's a consultant in the UK, and he convinced me of two things. One was that you could make great wine in England, and two, that it was financially viable. He was right about the first. I'm not sure about the second.
You're still trying to work it out.
Still trying to work out the second, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also you're doing it the hard way by going organic as well, so.
Yes, it does make it harder. You definitely need to spend more time looking after your vines because you have no systemic chemicals that you can use, so you have to be on top of things all of the time. And in this country, because of the climate, that is particularly difficult.
Yeah, yeah. It's a cold, I'd say humid day today, and that's just, if it was warmer, it would be lovely for moulds and mildews.
Yeah, probably not this time of the year, but certainly downy mildew is one of the things that we suffer from here quite a bit, and that is because of the damp conditions, damp warm conditions in the summer, going into the summer. So everybody suffers from downy mildew, and we have preventatives to stop it from spreading, but we've got nothing to knock it out, so you can't afford to let it get out of control.
Something you just got to be on top of.
You've got to be on top of it all of the time, yeah. And I think Well, we're only 5 hectares here.
But that does make you, I think you're saying it technically, according to UKVA, that makes you a large vineyard.
Yeah, well, it's not large, really. I mean, there are some very large vineyards in the UK. I mean, to try and translate that 5 hectares into bottles of wine, it's sort of probably 20, 25,000 bottles of wine a year. So that's, you know, in European terms or world terms, tiny. But yes, you're...
But if you're in Burgundy, it'd be a huge volume.
Well, I suppose so, yeah. but really... In my view, it would be difficult to manage an organic vineyard very much bigger than that in the UK because of the climate. And I think that's one of the reasons that you know, we're not intending to get very much bigger.
So 5 hectares, and your leasehold doesn't allow you to expand, or there's not vineyard sites?
Yeah, we do actually. We lease quite a bit more land next to the vineyard. So we have another 10 hectares probably that we could plant vines on. And we might do a little bit more planting, but we're taking it a step at a time.
Yeah, yeah. No, you've got to get some cash flow before you invest more, I suppose.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Okay, so the wines you make, you do a rosé and a traditional method. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, we're focused on the traditional champagne-style wines here, which really is, in my view, predominantly where it's at in the UK. And the reason for that, as I'm sure you know, is that you make quality sparkling wine from fairly acidic grape juice, and the best sparkling wines in the world are therefore made in cool climates where the grapes don't get too ripe. So we're mainly focused on that. For that reason, we have mainly the traditional champagne grape varieties planted here, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier. But as we mentioned earlier, it takes a long time to produce sparkling wine. And when I planted this vineyard in 2009, the idea of not being able to drink anything in for 8 years was just too hard to bear. So we said, well, okay, we'll make a still rosé from the Pinots. And still rosé is drunk quite young. So yep. we released our first still rosé in 2012.
And what's that made from?
Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier. It varies on the percentage from 1 year to the next, but probably about 60% Pinot Noir and 40% Pinot Meunier.
I thought you had some Silvana and some...
We have some Seval.
Seval,
sorry. We have a bit of Seval, which is a white grape that's grown quite a bit in the UK. It's a hybrid that was developed in France. It's not grown much in France, but we use the Seval in one of our sparkling wines with Chardonnay. We call it a Blanc de Blanc in France. Blanc de Blanc is pure Chardonnay, but along with some other vineyards in the UK, use Seval along with some Chardonnay. Ours is mainly Chardonnay, and the Seval gives it a bit more sort of gooseberry, green fruit sort of freshness to it, I would say.
Yeah, and a little bit of Pinot Gris as well, is that right?
We have a tiny bit of Pinot Gris, yes.
Well, what's that there for?
Well,
mistake?
When I planted this vineyard, we were just about to get to the point of planting. And my wife said, you are planting some Pinot Gris, aren't you? And I thought, oh, God, no, we haven't got any Pinot Gris. So we planted...
Is that her favourite grape?
It's her favourite grape. She likes Pinot Gris. So we planted a few rows, I have to say, with very mixed success so far. But we did, a couple of years ago, have a very small quantity of what we called Linda's Pinot. Linda's my wife, which we made from Pinot Gris and some... And some Pinot Noir, actually. So it was a white Pinot.
Pinot Gris is a permitted grape in Champagne, though. People don't talk about it, but it is one of the...
It is, yeah. And for the last couple of years, we've had so little Pinot Gris that we've just put it in with everything else. But I think, yes, it is a permitted grape in Champagne, yeah.
When you say it's so small, I think normally the European rules are all about if it's less than 5%, you don't even have to mention it type of thing.
It might be 5%. It might even be 15%. But, yes, certainly it would be less than that, and therefore you don't mention it. I think it was so small the last couple of years that it wouldn't have added anything apart from a tiny little bit of volume, so it wouldn't have added to the taste at all. It's a late-ripening variety, and, you know, people are producing some Pinot Gris in this country as a still wine, reasonably successfully, but it's not grown hugely here in the UK.
The other thing that you've got is our old mate Monty Walden. I've got a bottle in front of me called Pet Nat Monty's. Monty's Pet Nat. So what's going on there?
Well, our vineyard is biodynamic as well as organic. Biodynamics, you have to be organic to be biodynamic. And really what biodynamics is all about, it's just like a holistic approach to farming. And it falls into a couple of categories, really, that we do over and above organics. One is we try and follow the cycles of the moon and its position in the cosmos. And I think, you know, some of this you can sort of explain scientifically, but some not. I think most people will recognize that the moon has huge gravitational, it does have, you know, it's all about the effect on the waves and people, people's moods. And our view is it affects the flow of sap in the vines as well. So we try and prune on certain days or spray on certain days according to the position of the moon in the cosmos. And the other thing we do is use a lot of natural plant preparations. To try and improve the biodiversity and also this harmony in the vineyard between the earth and the plant and the cosmos. Monty's Pet Nat is a biodynamic wine that we produced with a friend of mine called Monty Walden. Yeah, he's a bit of a biodynamic whiz in Europe.
Yeah, no, we've had him on the show a few times, had a few good debates with Monty. But it's a Pet Nat, so what... The process of making what does PetNat stand for and what's the process?
Well, it stands for Petillon Naturel. They produce quite a bit of this in the Loire Valley and northern Italy. And there are two things which are different about this wine. It's a sparkling wine, but you only have one fermentation. So it's a bit like Methadone Sastral. So instead of having a secondary fermentation in the bottle, you have one fermentation. We part fermented it in the tank and then finish the fermentation in the bottle. You don't take the sediment out of the bottle. There's no dosage. This particular wine is bone dry. It's very fresh, very natural. It's just fermented Chardonnay grape juice, really. It was something we did for a bit of fun, and it worked quite well. We produced it in very small volumes. We don't do it every year, and at the moment, sadly, it's sold out.
You got a bottle in front, though.
I have got a bottle here, yeah, that's right.
I can see that it's still quite cloudy at the bottom, though.
Yeah, that's because the sediment's still in there. With champagne-style wines, at the end of the secondary fermentation process, after two or more years, then the sediment is taken out of the bottle. With a Petillon Naturel, very often it's left in the bottle, and you can drink the sediment with the wine. You know, it sort of adds to the character of it.
When I was younger, my dad used to tell me that if you swap your beers too much and you get too much of these strange yeast, they can have a bit of fun the next day with your flow through.
Well, we drank a fair bit of it when it was available, and we didn't seem to have that problem.
No problems. That's all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's also very low alcohol. And the other thing about it was made just with the wild yeast from the vineyard. So there was no additional yeast added. Yeasts have a taste profile all of their own. So the idea with this is that we produce something very natural to the vineyard, something that sort of more of a sense of place or terroir, very natural to the grapes that are grown here. But that's, it's a bit of a one-off for us. We may well do it again, but our main focus is on more traditional sparkling wines like champagne.
But your wines aren't biodynamic as a general rule, are they?
They're not, no. Most of our wines...
What's the reason for that?
Well, to be certified biodynamic, you're not allowed to add yeast to the wine. You can only use the wild yeasts that naturally occur on the vineyard. And that's great, and lots of people in other countries do that. In this country, and because we're a young vineyard, it's particularly difficult. You run the risk, of course, of introducing yeasts that you don't really want, that might not taste very nice. And so we like to do that, but we do it sort of on an experimental basis. And most of our wine, you know, we like to have a little bit more control over, and therefore use organic yeasts to start the fermentation process.
So how do you label your wine? Because you can't call it biodynamic. Do you just call it organic?
We call it organic, yeah. Unless it is one of these one-off wines that we produce. But it's certified organic.
So why do the extra effort if you're not getting the sort of branding?
I mean, I suppose the first thing to say is that, that branding to the public of biodynamic doesn't mean an awful lot. Organic does. Mm. Biodynamic is a term that's understood by sommeliers in the UK because some of the great vineyards in the world are biodynamic, like Vosne Romane, for example, is a biodynamic vineyard. But why do it? Well, first of all, it's good fun. You know, we have a lot of fun. It's different. But ultimately, we believe that organic practices produce better quality fruit and therefore better quality wine. And we think that the biodynamics might assist in that process as well.
Okay, so you've been going for a while. You haven't had many wines out. You've had your rosé out for a while, I presume. But, you know, what's the sort of uptake with the public and the community and the restaurants and all that sort of thing?
Well, because of the quantity of wine we produced, we're focused on selling locally, mainly into Surrey and also to an organic market, because there aren't so many organic vineyards in the UK.
No, Will Davenport's really...
Will Davenport's
and,
one,
yeah. And Prince Charles and his Duchy originals.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think of the 500-odd commercial vineyards in the UK, there's less than 20 that are certified organic and probably only half a dozen of us who produce any sort of volume at all. We were extraordinarily lucky to have our very first wine, our still rosé, served on the Royal Barge as part of the Diamond Jubilee celebrations.
Oh, yeah.
One of only four wines, three English wines and a red from New Zealand. And we could have sold tens of thousands that year, but unfortunately I only had 850, so that was that was a bit frustrating. Since then, we've continued to have a lot of success with that, and we've launched our sparkling wines, which... we were delighted to get awards at Decanter and IWC, silver awards at Decanter, and gold awards at the organic wine competition in Germany, a big organic wine competition. And then we also, you know, whilst we focus on local sales and organic sales, we've had quite a number of top restaurants take our wine. So we were delighted that Raymond Blanc's restaurant, the Manoir Quatre Saisons, took the Pet Nat and one of our sparklings and our rosé, and then people like Tom Kerridge, Hand of Flowers, take our wine. So we pretty well sell everything that we can make for every year.
How do you find, you know, if you're selling out and you're organic, how do you find that the yields differ between, say, an organic production here versus a normal production? Do you have any feel for that?
Well, I think the yields are definitely smaller being organic. I went to Geisenheim a few years ago, which is the big university
in Germany. I've been there. I've interviewed a few people.
Okay. They've done quite a lot of research on it. They reckoned organic yields are about 20% less.
Yeah.
Yields and sustainability of yields is one of the big issues in the UK because of the variability of the weather. And when vineyards generally suffer with poor yields, we probably suffer more.
Okay.
So it is an issue.
It can't be frost, because frost management isn't really an organic or biodynamic. Is it that powdery mildew that you were saying earlier?
Well, I think it's more a case of not being able to spray as many nutrients on the vines, so they take longer to establish. I would argue maybe that we end up with better quality fruit by producing less. Certainly, you know, there's a lot of data to suggest that. If you look at traditional vineyards in the UK, if they're struggling to ripen fruit, then they can spray things on that. Sugar movers, for example. The only thing we can do is to do what's called a green harvest, which is to take fruit off earlier in the year so we have smaller volume, so that has a better chance of ripening. So that certainly is a factor as well. So I would say, yeah, we do end up with less fruit per hectare, which is... is always a concern from a commercial viewpoint.
Always a concern, yeah. You mentioned sugar movers. I've never heard of that. So just before we close up, what is it? What's a sugar mover?
Well, I don't know much about them either, because we're organic and don't use them. but apparently there are products that you can spray on vines, which in effect hasten the movement of the sugars, the carbohydrates and sugars, into the fruit at the time of ripening from the rest of the plant.
Oh, okay.
So that helps ripen the fruit.
Yeah. It would have to be robbing it from the roots or somewhere, though, wouldn't it?
Well, I guess so. But then you can feed the roots with more chemicals and things, maybe, and feed, you know. So certainly, you know, we will look to do a green harvest every year.
Yeah.
Which not everybody will do. And that produces the yield.
Okay, but a green harvest, just for the listeners, if they're not quite sure, is where you go through the vineyard, remove a load of fruit, so the leaves that are producing the sugars have got less fruit to dilute it into, it's not as diluted, so you've got bigger concentrations of sugar.
That's exactly right. And it's probably the hardest thing that I do.
When you're struggling with yields.
In fact, I can't do it. My vineyard manager, Alex, has to do it because the idea, you know, she's. I just sort of pick a bunch here and a bunch there. And she said, no, Nick, that's not enough to take off to make a difference. This year, actually, we did actually do something with some of the fruit. We made what's called a verjus from it, which is a green juice, obviously. Made from the grapes, which is used in cooking. It dates back to Roman times, and we had one of our Michelin restaurants, Chez Bruce, took it to include on one of their dishes, which was nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
All right then, Nick, I think we're going to wrap it up there.
Okay, that's great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.